Welcome to Cannabis House Call. This podcast is committed to educating the discerning public and will make the case for cannabis as medicine. Your hosts, Dr. Les Matthews and Dr. Hal Altman, are physicians with advanced degrees in medical cannabis. The Cannabis House Call is sponsored by Compassionate Certification Centers, or CCC. CCC is a physician-owned and leading medical marijuana certification center that helps patients receive legal access to medical marijuana in Pennsylvania. Having certified more than 100,000 patients across the state through its in-office and virtual telehealth appointments, CCC makes the process of getting a Pennsylvania medical marijuana card fast and easy. Learn more at cccregister.com.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Cannabis House Call. My name is Dr. Les Matthews, and I'm once again joined on this production with my friend and colleague, Dr. Hal Altman. We are both medical doctors with advanced degrees in cannabis science and therapeutics, and embark on this podcast every week with the goal of providing unbiased and accurate information on all things cannabis to our listening public. We're once again pleased to be joined on this particular episode by Dr. Brian Donner. Brian is a thought leader in the field of medical cannabis and is going to help us today walk you through some information that we hope is useful and beneficial to you around the whole aspect of research around cannabis and specifically clinical trials. In several of our earlier podcasts, we were pleased to be joined by Dr. Andrew Koop, one of the professors at the University of Maryland School of Pharmacy. And in those episodes, we discuss some of the challenges that exist for researchers across the United States as it pertains to cannabis relative to its position as a Schedule I drug. And as we had that conversation, it dawned on Hal and I that we really hadn't spent as much time delving into what clinical trials are, how they're performed, why they're important, why they're difficult, specifically with cannabis research. So with that as a backdrop, I want to bring Dr. Donner in again. And Brian, as I mentioned, we had these conversations with Dr. Koop, and I thought it was important that we maybe just take a step back and give our audience an overview of what a clinical trial is, the challenges associated with performing clinical trials in general, and specifically those around medical cannabis. So thank you for joining us.
Yeah, absolutely. Happy to be back, and thank you guys for having me. So I'll try to start at the beginning, just a quick history about myself. I got into clinical research actually when I was a resident, and I started doing wound care and hyperbaric medicine. And that's really what led me into clinical research. And when we say clinical research, that means working with patients on potential interventions, whatever they may be, and studying those, right? And then as time developed, I really started to want to get into clinical research more from a medical cannabis standpoint. But as you had mentioned, Les, that is very, very difficult, with the main reason being because of the current Schedule I status of cannabis. So when you talk about clinical research, my perspective comes from what we say is one of the investigators. And the investigators are typically there's a principal and sub-investigators. And these are really the main physicians who are interacting and we'll say in charge of the studies. The gold standard of studies, we'll call it, is an RCT or a randomized clinical trial. It's controlled. And this is a trial where basically all, to try to explain it as in simple terms as I can, all of the variables that could compound or affect the results are tried to be controlled for. And this could be very complex and very far-reaching, but it's not just something that's sort of thrown in willy-nilly. All of the factors, the investigators are separated from the patients in understanding maybe what the drugs may be or in the intervention. So that's what we mean when we say blinded. And when we say controlled, we mean that we're trying to control for variables and across a wide patient population.
So I think it's fair to say that particularly in academic centers, that researchers are picky about what they regard as legitimate clinical trials or legitimate research. There's a pyramid or a hierarchy on the lowest rung are maybe case reports or anecdotal reports of a medicine or a treatment that's been effective for a patient or a few patients. There are observational studies where the variables that you talked about earlier really are not controlled. It really is just observing and seeing what happens when a particular population of patients with a particular disease is treated with a particular treatment. And then we get into randomized clinical trials. I hope that's what you're going to expand on.
Yeah, exactly. And I probably skip first, second, and third gear and jump straight up there into fourth. So no, you're exactly right, Hal. And there is really a spectrum of research that's from the most basic, just as you said, that's just really observing and collecting data that might be in the current or from the past, versus all the way up to this gold standard, the RCT trials, as I was talking about. And that's whenever we get into really controlling all of these, the different variables that may enter into a different study. So for example, what that might be, patient's age, that might be sex, it might be medications, it might be current ailment. And it's also important that there's no bias that's introduced into the research. And when we say things are blinded, or you hear that studies are double blinded, what that is trying to do is limit bias within the study. So, you know, to go into the really nitty gritty details of an RCT will probably be as boring as could be. But I think that the most important thing from an audience standpoint is to understand that when you hear RCT, or that's the, as I said, the gold standard, really the highest level of research. And then once this research is performed, typically it's what we call peer reviewed, meaning that this is submitted and that it's reviewed by peers to ensure that it's accurate and truthful and that it's appropriate. And then after that is whenever research can get into be what we call published. Typically, you will hear lots of times people talk about phased trials, phase one, phase two, phase three. This is an FDA designation more than anything else, and oftentimes is in relation to drug development. And each of those different phases can focus on a different part of the trial. For example, side effects versus how effective or efficacious the medicine was. So, but again, I don't mean to be repetitive, but the bottom line is RCT trials are really known in the research scope as the gold standard and the highest level. And that's not to say all the other levels below them are not valid or aren't needed. It's just an escalation.
I think that's well stated. Yep.
You mentioned double blinded. Can you explain to the audience what that means exactly within a RCT?
Yes, absolutely. And it, again, to help try to control bias, that's meaning that say we have a study and there's the patients are getting some medications. One could be an actual study medication and the other may be a placebo. In when we say double blinded, what that would mean that both the investigator and on the subject or patient side are not aware. They are blind to what treatment arm that they are receiving. And what this does, the idea behind this, is again to reduce bias. Obvious example, if somebody tells you you're getting a medication that's supposed to treat pain, there could potentially be an effect to that just because you know it. So by when we say blinded, that means we're limiting some of that information in order to reduce the potential bias.
And when we talk placebo, that basically refers to an inert or inactive substance that is made to look like the test drug, but in fact has no medical benefit.
Exactly. I couldn't have said it any better. That's absolutely correct.
Great.
So what we're trying to do with clinical trials is to basically decide whether or not cannabis is an effective medication for pick a diagnosis. So the more subjects that we have that are reflective of the population, the better the study. And there are statistical methods that are used that are beyond our scope that help us to decide whether the results that we're seeing are really related to the treatment, to the therapeutic, or whether it's just dumb luck, if you will.
Exactly. That's correct. And it's really gets down to the cause and effect, right? In medicine, from a clinical standpoint, you have to really go a long way in order to prove cause and effect. And there's a lot of steps in that process. So absolutely right now.
So, Brian, let's come to the topic of cannabis research and the challenges associated with the Schedule I designation. We have heard some guests and quoted articles from others who have not been guests that have made reference to the fact that performing cannabis research isn't necessarily as hard as some might think. What's your perspective on that, and what difference does a Schedule I designation really make?
Yeah, so this is one of those ones where I would agree, and then I would also vehemently disagree. So when you talk about, when we use the word cannabis in general, that can be pretty subjective, right? And there's certain components of cannabis that at this time, clinical research would be much easier to do based off federal regulations. So for example, we'll just talk about CBD as an isolate, one of those as an isolated cannabinoid there too. Because of some of the regulations in place, it might be easier to do research on that type of cannabinoid. There's potential for doing it being easier to do research on maybe synthetic cannabinoids. However, in my experience, as soon as you step over into the THC component, that's where things became very difficult, particularly if you want to do trials that cross state lines in places that have different types of regulations. So it just leads to a whole number of problems, and the logistics become impossible, the funding becomes impossible, and arguably the legality is at best in a gray area. So, which would lead to part of our discussion about hopefully when cannabis becomes adjusted in its schedule and it's removed as a Schedule I controlled substance, that will be a tremendous, tremendous step forward for research in cannabis.
So part of the confounding variable here is that most of the research in our country and throughout the world is done in academic centers. And at this point, with Schedule I designation, many of the medical schools and academic centers are concerned about losing funding, federal funding, NIH funding, and so forth, if they get involved in cannabis trials. So with all of that, Brian, are you involved in any clinical trials that either in the past or presently that you could share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. I can. Cannabis related. And there are actually a few different trials now. And it's important to know some of these are different. None of them, because of the regulations, have been, I would say, from a cannabis standpoint, the desired gold standard RCT. But for example, we did what we called like a retrospective data analysis or collection on the Pennsylvania Medical Cannabis Program after about a year, 18 months. I can't remember. Really, what we did was we put together a survey, and we got this out to patients, and then we collected that data and assimilated it, right? So that was one type of research that we did from CCC. I've recently been involved as the principal investigator in a trial with an oral medical cannabis preparation that was studying the effects of diabetic peripheral neuropathy. And then the final thing that we did recently was we did an observational case series on a topical wound care product that had cannabinoids incorporated into it, and really did, again, more of a real-time data analysis and comparison on healing rates. So I've been fortunate that I have been involved a little bit from this standpoint. None of the products I was able to use THC, and I'm sure, you know, we all agree how important that is from a medical standpoint, but I would have never been able to do even those, I would say, 6-7 years ago. And I think there's so many what we'll call niche areas that cannabis could be researched on and could have a huge benefit.
So Brian, put on your looking glass kind of perspective, and if or perhaps when cannabis is in fact rescheduled, what do you predict will happen on the research side? Will there be a rapid explosion of clinical research related to cannabis and specifically THC? And who will fund it and where will it be done? What do you think will happen?
The $1 million question, right? Or the $100 million question. I do think there will be a rapid expansion I think it's going to take a little bit for people to understand the significance of that change and what that's going to mean on a national level. I think that opens the door to not only government money, but potentially big pharma as well, whether you think that is good or bad, right? So I think from the perspective of access and having a clear, more defined regulatory standpoint, and then having funding, I do think it will be a pretty big escalation. How that will be executed is going to be something that's going to be very interesting, because cannabis has been incorporated into medicine in about of as non-traditional of a manner as it could be, right? So there's no way you just flip the switch and all of a sudden make this sort of be like everything has in the past, because there's already institutions set up and sort of ready to go. So I expect it to go really quickly. And I think largely because I think access to funding is going to be better. Where and how that goes down, I think, is a little bit to be determined, but to me, I wouldn't be surprised if it's on a large scale. You have government, institutional level, and academic research, and then you also have private research and sponsors that are going on as well.
Yeah, it could be a very exciting time for cannabis when that rescheduling occurs.
That's going to be a profound thing. And for guys like me, and I would suspect guys like you, that's what I've been waiting for. And because to me, that's what it legitimizes on a national level, cannabis is an incorporation into modern medicine, right? And it opens the doors for us to really, really dig in deep. So it's a once in a lifetime, once in a, I don't even know the description. It only, you know, this type of thing can only happen once. And so, yeah, super exciting. And to be able to be part of that and help try to shape things in the right fashion is, I mean, for a guy like me, it's all I could ask for. It's awesome.
We've spoken in the past, Brian, that none of us is suggesting that cannabis is a panacea. It appears to have very specific application for a few disorders, but until we do the science, until we do the studies that really determine what's effective and what isn't, we're sort of stuck. So we're all trying to advocate as best we can to try to get the scheduling changed and then get on with the years and years of clinical research that's going to be needed to define it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And for us to understand the endocannabinoid system on a physiological level and how it works better. And once we do that, we're going to be able to give patients the ability to treat themselves better. And that's the ultimate goal.
We're all guided by the Hippocratic Oath, part of which says do no harm. And that's certainly everybody's goal. And it's harder when we don't have the solid research behind us to make those decisions.
And solid on a national level and unified, I would say, more than anything else, because I think there's more research out there than most people think, but it's not all put together in a cohesive and linked way, which is what we need. So everybody has access.
Well, Brian, Les and I deeply appreciate your willingness to come on and share your knowledge and your expertise with us. And I'm sure the listeners feel the same. We're going to give you an open invitation to come back anytime that you feel like you've got something that you want to share with us.
Well, I appreciate that greatly, and I'll absolutely be back. And I want to thank both of you for what you're doing. I hope you know it's appreciated and doing an excellent job.
Thank you, Brian.
Okay, well, that'll wrap things up for this episode of Cannabis House Call. We hope you'll join us next week for our next installment. Thank you.
All information, material, and content on this podcast is for general information and educational purposes only and is not intended as a substitute for professional and/or medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment by a qualified physician or healthcare provider. No doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of this information and any materials linked to this podcast is at the user's own risk. Cannabis House Call does not offer personal health or medical advice. If you have a medical emergency, call your doctor or call 911 immediately.